about all the things God's done for us. As we're approaching Thanksgiving, we tend to think about food and family. But yet, with Thanksgiving, we should think about all the different things. And he touched on a few of those in the prayer that we should be thankful for. So let's be thinking about that. That's not what the lesson's about this morning, though. Okay. So, my question to you this morning is, why can't people drive on the interstate? Yeah, when I was younger, I just couldn't look forward enough to getting a driver's license, of course, the permit, and driving. I just couldn't wait to get out there and drive. And now, as I look back, I just wonder, how come people can't drive? Especially if it's raining. If it's raining, you have to turn your flashers on. You have to slow down. You can't go more than 45 on the interstate if it's raining. People just do not know how to drive, do they? Especially when it's raining. And if there's a line of traffic, all you have to do is turn your blinker on, and that forgives you for cutting all the way to the front of the line. You can go all the way past those others, just turn your blinker on. Everybody's like, oh, just go ahead. Just forgive them. And that's the way it works on the interstate? It seems like it, doesn't it? All right, what am I doing? I'm complaining, aren't I? I'm complaining. All right. What are some things we like to complain about? There's a few. Let's take a look. A few of the things we like to complain about. Bad customer service. We're a customer service industry. You talk on the phone, and they may not even be able to speak English. Isn't it great? You talk to somebody, can't speak English, and you're... What about those telephone calls you're constantly getting? And on your cell phone, it even tells you sometimes the spam calls, it'll even tell you. So many of them. And there we go, those people who cut in line, whether you're at the theater, the store, the interstate, doesn't it frustrate you? People cutting in line? Just... All right, cold or hot? Too cold, too hot. Just not enough, not satisfied. What about, well, Amazon Prime packages usually come pretty quickly, but the pack, they just don't get there, or they're late, or, oh, it's in the queue, but, oh, it's going to get delivered tomorrow, though. Okay. There we go. This one I'm really working on, traffic, as you can probably tell. I'm working on traffic myself because I'm very impatient with traffic, and people just can't drive. But, okay, connecting to Wi-Fi. Yes, that's not always an issue, but it can be. What about litter and people who litter? Wouldn't you just like to, when somebody rolls a window down and throws trash out, wouldn't you just like to grab it and say, look, you lost this, and look at their face and see what they said when you just hand it back to them? They probably just throw it right back out the window or say some choice words to you. It'd just be, anyway. The weather. Do we like to complain about that? Sure. We sure do. The weather is, like it was said earlier, too hot, too cold. Loud or noisy neighbors. Now, if you live in a home, you probably don't have to deal with this. If you're in an apartment or a condo, yes, they're right next, like, on the other side of that wall. And you can have trouble with loud or noisy neighbors. Can be a problem. Can cause complaints. Continuing, those being late. Easily to complain about. And when you get, y'all have plenty of parking spaces. There's some places that, you know, they're limited, not enough, just not enough parking spaces. Easy to complain about. People who stare at their phones and pretend to be talking to you, you think you've got their attention, but they're not looking at you. They're not making eye contact. And there's those emails, phone calls that just soliciting. You don't need those. You don't want those. But they irritate you. Yes. All right. Bad phone signal. Some companies claim that they cover all areas. Well, I haven't been out there to find out to see. But where I work, I get one, maybe two bars. It's easy to complain about. Oh, it's easy. Feeling hungry, angry, put them together. Yes, you can get hangry. All right. This isn't the entirety of the sermon. But what, if you think about all of these things, we're letting something negative overcome all of those positive things that we could be thinking about, could be focusing on, by focusing on the negative. So, complaining, there are dangers in it. We're going to talk about this morning, dangers of complaining. We're looking at some biblical examples this morning and see what the consequences were for that. We're also going to talk about an actual definition for complaining and some examples and reasons why we complain. We looked at some of the things we like to complain about. It's easy to complain. It sure is. It's easy to think about, oh, how bad it is. But we're going to talk about, again, an actual definition, some examples, consequences of that, and again, hopefully some lessons. This lesson is for me as much or more as it is for you. I have benefited so many times reviewing this lesson, getting it ready, but I hope you can catch a tidbit or two, or maybe a couple of thoughts that will help you in reducing the complaint, or maybe get rid of it altogether in not complaining, because it is really easy to do. All right, as we're turning to Numbers chapter 11, Numbers chapter 11, the Israelites have seen the plagues of Egypt. They've seen the miracles that God was able to do. They have left Egypt, crossed the Red Sea. They've also seen the pillar of fire by night, the pillar of smoke by day. So they know God's power. They know God's with them. They're in the wilderness, headed toward the promised land. Again, as we look at Numbers chapter 11. Numbers chapter 11, let's look at the first three verses. As we learn from the Israelites in their complaining. Now the people became like those who complain of adversity in the ears of the Lord. And the Lord heard them, and his anger was kindled, and the fire of the Lord burned among them and consumed some at the outskirts of the camp. The people then cried out to Moses, and Moses prayed to the Lord. And the fire died out, so that place was called Taberah, because the fire of the Lord burned among them. The Israelites were complaining. At first, they said, well, they cried out to Moses and Aaron. They complained. God heard them, sent the fire among them, killed some of them because of complaining. Killed them, sent the fire through them. Then they cried out to Moses. Moses prayed. The fire stopped, and they called the place Taberah because it was so significant that God sent the fire among them, killed some of them for what they had done, simply for complaining. But do we know what they complained about? Do we know why? Not yet. We have to continue with verse 4. That's just verses 1 through 3. Let's continue and see what the Israelites actually did that caused God to send the fire among them. Picking up verse 4. Now the rabble who were among them had greedy cravings. And the sons of Israel also wept again and said, who will give us meat to eat? We remember the fish which we had to eat for free in Egypt, the cucumbers, the melons, the leeks, the onions, and the garlic. But now our appetite is gone. There is nothing to look at except this manna. There's so many lessons to learn from the Israelites in this. Let's back up and pick a few of them. At the beginning, this rabble who among them had greedy cravings. Greedy means excessive desire for, and the cravings are excessive desire for. The greedy is lusted after. They were simply lusting, really, really wanting meat. Who will give us meat to eat? And they're remembering back at how good it was back in Egypt. Listen to them. Thinking back in Egypt, we remember the fish which we used to eat for free in Egypt. The cucumbers, the melons, the leeks, the onions, and the garlic. Oh, they're thinking about all that, those vegetables and that fish. Now, why they threw the free in there, unless the food was free after they got all their work done, maybe the food was free, but they weren't free. They were slaves. They were beaten. They were treated harshly. So why are they thinking back to how good it was back when they were slaves, but right now they're on their way to the promised land. They're free, but they may not have all that luscious food that they had back in slavery. But what are they doing? They're looking back to the way it was. And right now, they may not have all those vegetables. They may not have all that fish. They have manna to eat. But they're looking back to all that good stuff that they thought it was better than it is now. They're not being content. They're being selfish. They're not being thankful for the here and now, because they're on the road to the promised land and God is among them. Again, they've seen the plague. They've seen the plagues that God, the power of God among the Egyptians. They've seen that. They've seen the Red Sea parted. They've seen the pillar of fire and the pillar of smoke. So they know God is there and with them. Continuing, they're thinking back. And then the last verse, verse 6, but now our appetite is gone. There is nothing at all to look at except this manna. They're loathing the manna. They're just, I guess, tired of how many different ways you can make manna. What's interesting also is, did they have to plant anything? Did they have to sow anything? They had to pick it up. They had to go out and gather it up as God directed them. But He provided. It was just there. They didn't have to work. They just simply had to go pick it up and gather it for that daily's use. That's it. And yet, they're complaining because they didn't have all these other things to go along with it, or that fish. They're wanting meat. Who will give us meat to eat? And what's interesting, when they say this to Moses and Aaron, when they say this to Moses, who will give us meat to eat? Do they think Moses can do that? No, but they're complaining to Moses. All right, lots of lessons to learn from the Israelites. But if we continue down the same chapter, chapter 11, verse 32 and 33, we see that God, 31 and 32 rather, God provides quail, so He does give them the meat they're asking for. They're asking for meat. God heard them. Even though they're complaining to Moses, God gives them the quail they request. Now, we're going to continue the thoughts of what we've learned. The Israelites did this. God sent fire through them to kill those that complained and murmured. Does that not seem serious to you? It does to me. It hit me pretty hard that God sent fire through the Israelites just for complaining. That was serious. Okay, let's learn some more from the Israelites. Numbers 13, we're not going to read that one, but Moses has been instructed to send the 12 spies in among the land of Canaan, and he's done so. Chapter 13, we're going to pick up in chapter 14, beginning at verse 1. We know the results, but let's learn some lessons from them as those 12 spies come back for investigating the land. Numbers 14, verse 1. Then all the congregation raised their voices and cried out, and the people wept that night. And all the sons of Israel grumbled against Moses and Aaron. And the entire congregation said to them, if only we had died in the land of Egypt, or even if we had died in this wilderness, so why is the Lord bringing us into this land to fall by the sword? Or our wives and our little ones will become plunder. Would it not be better for us to return to Egypt? So they said to one another, let's appoint a leader and return to Egypt. Again, we've already been through. They've seen the fire go through and kill some of them for grumbling. And here we have another event. The 12 spies go out. And of course, we know the 10 spies had the report. The two, Joshua and Caleb, had the good report. But they stirred up the crowd enough that they grumbled against Moses and Aaron, saying, we can't go any further. We came this far. Why did we come this far? Why? Why have we come this far? Why can't we just go back? We should have died in Egypt. We should have died along the way to have gotten this point and be killed, and then our children and our wives will just be free for plunder if we're put to death by these Canaanites. All right. Verse 3, so why is the Lord bringing us into this land to fall by the sword? And then verse 4, so they said to one another, let us appoint a leader and return to Egypt. Forget you, Moses and Aaron. Let's just turn around and go right back and find somebody to take us back. It would have been better if we'd gone back. They thought it was better to have that food back in Egypt earlier. Let's just go back to Egypt. Hard to imagine. They're not demonstrating, that faith that Caleb Joshua and Caleb did. God had led them this far. He had demonstrated His strength and power. He's fulfilling His promise. It just may not be to the terms the Israelites are used to. It may not be at the speed the Israelites are wanting. It's taking too long, whatever. But again, God is taking them to the promised land. He will provide a way to do it. once they saw the Canaanites and had the report, it's true. The 10 spies were right that the Israelites couldn't have done it by themselves. They could not. There's no way they could have. They couldn't. The cities are fortified. There's giants. By themselves, they could not have taken the land of Canaan. But as Joshua and Caleb knew, it just took God to be with them, which he was. Where was the faith of the others? Where was that confidence in God's promises following through? They just lost focus. Continuing in Numbers 14, let's pick up with verse 26. Numbers 14, 26. The Lord spoke to Moses and Aaron again, saying, "How long shall I put up with this evil congregation who are grumbling against me? I have heard the complaints of the sons of Israel, which they are voicing against me." That's God speaking. "Say to them, as I live, declares the Lord, just as you have spoken in my hearing, so I will do to you. Your dead bodies will fall in this wilderness, all your numbered men, according to your complete number, from 20 years old and upward, who have grumbled against me." God is simply, but he's talking to Moses and Aaron. He's saying, "I heard them. You think it is better for you to have died in the wilderness, to have died before you got to this point? Well, guess what? That's what's going to happen. God is going to allow that to happen because be careful what you wish for." And they said, "It would have been better for us to have died back then than to die here." God said, "Well, that's what's going to happen." So he allowed that to happen, that those that grumbled against him, 20 years old and upward, would not make it into the promised land. Just think about that. It's just so sad that they got this far. They lost focus, lost that trust and faith in God to not just follow through. He's got us this far. Why not just continue on? It's easy for us to look back and question it. It is. But we need to learn from that God has now, this is the second time, groups have passed and have died for complaining. And what's interesting is, again, God is telling Moses and Aaron that they were complaining against him. The people are still complaining to Moses and Aaron. All right, continuing. Numbers 14, picking up at verse 36. "As for the men whom Moses sent to spy out the land and who returned and led all the congregation to grumble against him by bringing a bad report about the land, those men who brought the bad report of the land also died by a plague in the presence of the Lord. But Joshua the son of Nun and Caleb the son of Jephunneh remained alive out of those men who went to spy out the land." So the 10 spies also died by plague. But listen to this. In verse 36, "As for the men whom Moses sent to spy out the land, who returned and led all the congregation," those 10 men rallied the others to be on their side, to join in the complaint. And that's what we're going to look at next, is some of the reasons we complain. And when we're around complaining, you got to be careful how you deal with that, or you become a part of the complaint. That's next. Okay, here. But again, see how those 10 spies pep rallied, whatever you want to say, but they rallied the congregation to join in their complaining. Verse 36, "And who returned and led all the congregation to grumble against him by bringing a bad report about the land." They didn't have to join in with those 10 spies, but some did. I venture to say not all of them did, because some would have followed Joshua and Caleb's belief that, yes, we got this far. Why can't we continue on? God's able to do it. Not us, but God is. Verse 37, those 10 died by plague. Verse 38, Joshua and Caleb remained alive of those 12 spies. All right? Now, not only do we learn from that verse that they were complaining to Moses and Aaron, but God heard it. If we go back to Exodus 16 and verse 8, we also learn Moses let the people know. God told Moses and Aaron, "I hear the people's complaints." Who are they complaining to? They're complaining to God. They think they're complaining to Moses and Aaron, but look at Exodus 16 and verse 8. Sorry, I didn't pull it. There it is. Exodus 16 and verse 8. Moses said to the people, This will happen when the Lord gives you meat to eat in the evening and bread to the full in the morning, for the Lord hears your grumblings, which you grumble against Him. And what are we? Your grumblings are not against us, but against the Lord. Moses put it to them. He says, all this you've been complaining about to Aaron and I, guess what? We hear it, but it's God you're complaining to and about. He put it to them. Now, it was after the fact, because a lot of them had already passed. And here now, a lot of them are going to die in the wilderness and not get into the promised land. It's very sad. What have we learned? There are a lot of dangers of complaining. God killed them simply for complaining. Complaining reflects what's in our heart. As we said earlier, focusing on the negative or focusing on the positive. How bad is what they were experiencing? Just because they're looking back, oh, look at all that good food we had back in Egypt. We just have manna, and we don't have all those vegetables. But we're free. God's with us. We're marching toward Canaan, and it is taking a long time. Yes. Okay. Not to their specifications. So here's our definition. What is complaining? Please listen carefully. It's a good one. Listen carefully. This is what complaining is by definition. Complaining is to express grief, pain, discontent, dissatisfaction, annoyance to someone unrelated to the issue. Now let that sink in. Let's read it again. Complaining is to express grief, pain, discontent, whatever your negative feeling is, expressing it to someone unrelated to the issue is complaining. And it has to be verbal. If I keep it in my head or in my heart, it's not a complaint. It may be negative. It's not a complaint until I share it with someone. Not complaining. To speak directly and only to someone who can resolve the issue you're dealing with or facing. Who can do something about it. They're not complaining. That's not a complaint if you go to them directly. Here's some examples. You're at a restaurant. Your food comes to you late, and it's cold. And as soon as the server walks away, you turn to your wife. We're never coming back here again. This is the worst place I've ever eaten. You turn to the people at the next table. This is awful. I'm leaving. I don't want to even pay for this food. That is complaining. You get the server back and say, would you mind heating this food up a little bit? It came to us a little late. Or my steak's not done. Will you take it back and just cook it a little bit longer? It's just not done. That is not complaining. Complaining to your wife, the neighbors, others unrelated to fix the issue is complaining. Another example, my car's check engine light. I've got a vehicle right now that the check engine light, it doesn't go off. So therefore, I'm always wondering, well, is it another code or is it... Anyway, beside the point. Your check engine light comes on. You go to your mechanic. My check engine light came back on. Would you mind checking the codes? Maybe there's a new one that popped up. Not a complaint. Again, I go to my wife. Honey, the mechanic's the ridiculous, the stupidest mechanic I've ever dealt with. I will never go back to... That's complaining. It's also slandering him. But that's complaining. She's not the mechanic. My coworkers at work are not the mechanic. Go to your mechanic. Same with your equipment at work. It quit working. I can't get my report done. I complained to my coworkers at lunch. I just can't believe this company. Where's the money to get things fixed? That's a complaint. Call the technician up. Hey, my laptop stopped again. Can you fix it? I'll get you another one. I'll either get it fixed or get you a loaner. Thank you. That's not complaining. The person who can fix it or keeping it to yourself is not complaining. As soon as you let those feelings, negative feelings to others who cannot do anything about it or can't fix the issue, becomes a complaint. Now let's take a look at some of the reasons we complain. There's a few of them, and they have their own reasons behind it. Why do we complain? Number one. It is to get attention. Getting attention. Such as, it's been hot for how many days now? Does it ever get cool here? It's just steaming hot. I can't stand it anymore. I'm going to have to move. How would you reply to that? Again, like I said earlier, you got to be careful how, if you're in a conversation with somebody, you have to be careful how you answer or you become a part of the complaint. And again, you have to think about this. If you don't have to reply, just don't reply. Just nod your head or just, you know. You know what? You could say, it does get cooler in October in Florida if you wait long enough. Okay. And also, when you complain about traffic, oh, traffic is awful. Yes, I understand that. But we don't have to complain with it. The thing is, I would have to either give up driving or just find another way to be thankful that I actually got to work. Be positive. I actually made it to work. It may have taken a little bit longer than last time, but at least I made it to work. Be positive. Think on the positive side versus getting involved with somebody that's complaining and agreeing with them and becoming a part of the complaint. So you got to be careful with that one. All right. So getting attention. Some people use it as a conversation starter. It's easy to do when you're on the elevator and there's not much to talk about. What do we want to complain about today? So you got to be careful. Okay. It doesn't have to be a complaint. It could just be conversation. Getting attention. Another reason we complain is to remove responsibility. This one means I've got work to do, but I may fail. And if I do fail, I'm going to complain ahead of time to let you know that I could fail. Let me give you for an instance. Our boss gave me more work, another report to get done. So if I don't get them all done, it's my boss's fault. But I'm telling my coworkers all this. Instead of asking my boss, are you sure I'll be able to get this done? I may need some extra time. If I go to my coworkers and tell them all the problems I got or that I may fail, that's complaining about my boss giving me too much work. And I may fail. If I'm going to, I'm preparing you ahead of time that I'm going to fail. That's removing responsibility. Also, a student says, my teacher just changed the requirements for the project. I'm not going to get them done on time. It's the teacher's fault. So what's the student saying? They didn't listen in class. They didn't read their notes. But they're going to complain about the teacher versus I should have got that report done when I should have and on the right format, on the right poster. I should have been paying attention. Removing responsibility so that it looks like it wasn't really my fault for my failure. And I can complain along the way to make it look better. Inspiring envy. Letting our envy or pride put others down. What am I trying to do? To make myself or others look better by putting others down. He did an okay job, but he's obviously not the one for the job. I am. He's not material for leadership. He's always late. He's just not the right person. Who is? I or myself. So say I'm inspiring envy to make others look bad by complaining where I'm trying to make myself or someone else look better than who got the job above me, who got promoted before me, or who's recognized before me. Inspiring that envy through complaining. If you have to come across this, try to make positive suggestions. You are the best person for the job. You are a team leader. You can accomplish what you want. Your team is a good team. Try to think of positive reactions versus negative and try not to get involved or caught up in complaints to become a part of it. Some people do it to inspire power. This, get others on your side. In other words, the more I complain, the more people that agree with me makes me feel like I must be right. My complaint must be legit. And though I made it up, you know, if enough people, this appears to be, and I can't guarantee it, what the 10 spies did, that they got enough people rallied around them that they carried it on to Moses and Aaron. And that this is as far as we can go, as the Israelites would say. We can't go any further. There's giants in the land of Canaan, and they all have fortified cities. We've come this far. That's it. Let's turn around and go back. That was sad. Okay. Power. That you get others behind you, they believe in you, and that my complaint must be right. All right, and then the last one, excuse poor performance. This one's very similar to the to the second one, remove responsibility. The remove responsibility, again, is preparing you that I may do a bad job. This one, I've already done the bad job. Now I'm going to complain to take it away from me again because I did do a bad job. I failed. And now I'm complaining. That's the difference between that one and this one. But it's really my fault when I'm trying to make it look like it's not. Honey, I had a meeting at the end of the day. I didn't know about it. Last minute meeting called, and I totally forgot to stop at the store. I didn't get any of those things for supper that you asked me to. Who am I blaming it on? Work, my meeting that I forgot to stop at the grocery store. Honey, I forgot to stop. Let me go to the store right now and get it. As opposed to blaming it or shifting that responsibility that I forgot to get those things. I tried to get that report done on time, but the accounting department just didn't get me those files in time. I failed because the accounting department didn't get me those files in time. I should accept responsibility. I'm not. I'm trying to complain to show it's not my fault that I failed. Excusing poor performance when we should accept responsibility, fess up to it, but make the best of it instead of complaining. It's the same, we've learned, let's go back. When we said it comes from the heart, here's the verse that says that. Matthew 12, 34 through 37. You offspring of vipers, how can you, being evil, express any good things? From the mouth speaks from that which fills the heart. The good person brings out of his good treasure good things, and the evil person brings out of his evil treasure evil things. But I tell you that for every careless word that people speak, they will give an account of it on the day of judgment. For by your words you will be justified, and by your words you will be condemned. That second bullet earlier, it's from the heart that these things start. And then they become verbalized. If they're in your heart, that's one thing, like we said earlier. But when they become verbalized, it could become a complaint. And that's what it says here. By your words, you will be justified, and by your words, you will be condemned. It doesn't become words until it comes out of your mouth. Remember? It has to be verbalized. So if it's not, you're much better off. Same in the, when I work with a coworker that likes to complain about specific things over and over again. I'm constantly thinking in my mind, how do I react to this so I'm not condoning it, agreeing with it, becoming a part of it. I had to really, really be careful and over think about and always try to say, I think they're doing the best they can. I think they're trying to do what they can without saying, oh, you're absolutely right. These are the worst people. How did we ever get in this situation? That would be agreeing with them, condoning them, becoming a part of the complaint. So our words, be careful. They don't have to come out. They can stop. You're in control of them. And then once they come out, then you got to deal with them. Proverbs 4 and verse 23, likewise. Watch over your heart with all diligence, for from it flow the springs of life. Complaining reflects what's in your heart. That's what we said earlier. God killed him for complaining. Complaining reflects what's in your heart. Now, we're going to talk about how bad was their experience. How bad was the experience of the Israelites now compared to us today? And now we're going to look at two biblical examples of those who did have situations where it was pretty rough. Let's talk about Naomi first in Ruth chapter 1. Naomi had some things she had to deal with. Ruth chapter 1 verse 19. So they both went on until they came to Bethlehem. And when they came to Bethlehem, all the city was stirred because of them. And the women said, is this Naomi? But she said to them, do not call me Naomi. Call me Mara. For the Almighty has dealt very bitterly with me. I went away full, but the Lord has brought me back empty. Why do you call me Naomi, since the Lord has testified against me and the Almighty has afflicted me? What did she have to go through? She went through a famine, lack of food, lost her husband, lost her children. And And back in that day and time, when they lost family support, did they have a lot to look forward to as a woman as far as income and being taken care of financially? No, they did not. That means of support was gone. She didn't have a lot to look forward to. She suffered a lot. How was that in comparison to the Israelites? God fed them every day, gave them drink along the way, led them, guided them, was there. Was it to their specifications, their time frame, their likings? Were they content? All right, continuing. We're going to look at Job. Did Job suffer? Yes, he did. We already know, pretty much most of you probably already tell what he went through. We're not going to read the passage, but real quickly. Job, death of his livestock, death of his servants. And you know, it could increasingly got worse. His sons and his daughters. Loss of his wealth kept getting worse. Boils all over his body where he sat by the fire and simply would scrape the boils off his body. Could you imagine? It just hurts to think about that. After all this other, covered with boils and just sitting, just scraping the... Then, on top of that, his wife said, curse God and die. Just get it over with. He lost her support and knew that she wasn't there to support him like he had hoped. He lost all. All right? Let's learn from Job. Job chapter 1, verse 20 through 22. What can we learn from Job? Then Job got up, tore his robe, and shaved his head. Then he fell to the ground and worshiped. He said, naked I came from my mother's womb, and naked I shall return there. The Lord gave, and the Lord has taken away. Blessed be the name of the Lord. Despite all this, Job did not sin, nor did he blame God. He stayed positive. He looked at, these were blessings from God along the way. I didn't deserve them. I didn't earn them. But God allowed me to have these blessings. It's just now, God, they're gone. The blessings are gone. I've lost all of those things. But he didn't sin and he didn't blame God, as we learned the Israelites did on several occasions. Weren't content. They weren't satisfied. They were being selfish. But we can learn from Job, he did not. He continued to keep his trust and faith in God. Dangers of complaining. Oh. God killed them for complaining. Reflects what's in the heart. How bad is what they were experiencing versus Naomi, Job, us? Just think about it. There's no comparison to what Job went through. Naomi went through. The Israelites, they were not focused on the positive. They were focused on what they were missing out on and what they had back in Egypt. What you focus on is your target. Like I said before, is it positive? Is it negative? Which one do you mostly focus on? And we said earlier, Matthew 6:21, for where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. Matthew 7, verses 7 and 8, ask and it will be given to you. Seek and you will find. Knock and it will be open to you. For everyone who asks, receives, and the one who seeks, finds, and the one who knocks, it will be opened. Before we look at our summary, let's try to remember the definition of complaining. To express grief, pain, discomfort, dissatisfaction to someone or anyone unrelated to the issue, unable to fix the issue, is a complaint when it's verbalized. You keep it in your head or in your own thoughts, it's not. Or if you tell the person that's responsible for it or that can do something about it, that is not a complaint. Reminding us of our definition. God killed them for complaining. That alone should be a lesson. Complaining reflects what's in your heart, positive versus negative. How bad is it, really, what you're going through? What we focus on is our target. Now, I do actually have one more slide. What we learned from this. we shouldn't complain, especially to God. Don't complain to God. Now, how do we approach God? That's right. We should pray to God about things. Now, you got to be careful. Are we in a position to demand, to force, to coerce God on our time frame, to our specifications, like it sounds like the Israelites were missing out on their, again, time frame? It's up to God on His time frame. We've got to really learn that and be patient. Pray in humility, asking God's time frame. But ask, you can ask Him for things. Don't make it a complaint. Verbalize it to God. Appreciate what we have. Be thankful, as we started our, had the prayer. Started earlier. Lots of things to be thankful for. We have a lot of positives. Yes, sometimes we have negatives that take away from that, but we got to stay focused on the positive. Not let the negatives take over or ruin all of the positive. Focus on those positives. Focus on God's promises. Again, it's what the Israelites should have done. Joshua and Caleb did that. They focused. They knew God was there. God had already promised. Entering the promised land. We're on our way. Keep focused. Stay on course. We can do this. Put your faith into action by following and staying focused on God's promises. Not complaining. This sermon actually came from a gentleman that had this sermon years ago. And from that, he started a foundation, which he started traveling around, actually having seminars about complaining. And they actually have bracelets that they would give out. And my brother-in-law, who actually did this sermon before I did, that's who I got the sermon from, was my brother-in-law, was that they have these bracelets. And when you complain, you have to switch arms or hands with a bracelet to help you stop complaining. I'm not selling that. I'm just saying that they've had seminars to where we like to complain. I am a pro at it. I learned a lot from this, and I hope you can gather a few tidbits of this to realize how serious it is, and that we can take from that learning how not to reducing it or not complaining at all.